Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. I am so excited. My friend Hillary Ramo was with us tonight, and she was a colleague at Achieve Radio, where we both were for a while. And she's got a brand new book, soon to be bestseller, if it's not already. It's entitled The Hillary Ramo Show's Transcripts, Conversations on Technology, Time Travel, ETs, 9/11, and Consciousness. And folks, this book is jam-packed, full of information. As I was telling Hillary before we started the show tonight, that her book goes back to 9/11 and even further back, and the information sets up for what we are experiencing today. So if there's only one book that you read on the what going on today and will allow you to think, if you're truly a free thinker, this is the book to get. It's called The Hillary Ramo Show Transcripts. You will not be disappointed. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But folks, you know, the real question is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, The Men and Money Book, and Masterful Choices, The Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings around relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. And you can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living. And again, that's from my website, MoniqueChapman.com. In these turbulent times when freedom of speech is being capped with tighter control, Hillary's authentic interviews offer deep insight into the formative years of many hot topics today, such as technology, time travel, data collection, climate change exploration, and the evolution of consciousness, and so much more. Her book is a testament to the power of alternative media and the millions of people who engage with it. A leading voice in the industry since 2005, Hillary Ramo has been heard on the Achieve Radio Network as host of the Hillary Ramo Show, and this is what this book is based on, folks, and that was for over a decade. She brings powerful information to listeners without the gratuitous showmanship and partisan censorship too often found in mainstream media. She has a background in business and the healing arts. She's also an artist. I mean, this lady kind of does it all. And you can check her out at her website, and that's HillaryRaimo.com. That's HillaryRaimo.com. And the book, The Hillary Ramo Show Transcripts, is available everywhere, so go get it today. It's a great investment for your mind and for your thinking. Welcome, Hillary.
Hi, Monique. It's so great to be here. Wow. You are doing some great things in the world. Thank you for that introduction as well. It's so great to be here.
Thank you. It's so great to have you. It's been a while since I talked to you. You know, I was born and raised in Gilderland, and I know that you're in the Clifton Park area of New York. And it's nice to connect to a homegirl.
Wow. You know, I remember you've been doing this just about as long as I have, and I remember when we did a show together, you mentioned that, and I couldn't believe it, that we had gone all the way out into the world. world to then come back together and say, hey, I live right near you.
Small world, isn't it? You just never know. I want to jump right into this because you have so much going on in this book. And again, thank you so much for writing it because this is really a book for free thinkers. And if you're not a free thinker, definitely get the book and allow it to expand your mind, the information, however you want your mind to expand. Now, you chose about 20 conversations in your years of being on the radio and recordings. Why these specific 20 conversations?
Well, you know, that was a big task when I decided to put this book together. So when I started to look through all of the years of content that I had produced, I realized that there was a lot of topics that I had covered that were relevant to what was going on today. If you were to, you know, look at the headlines or follow along on social media, there's a lot of topics that are just in everybody's face constantly. And some of these conversations that took place years and years and years ago actually gave some very interesting hindsight to these relative conversations that people were having. So I felt like, what a great way to not only honor my body of work as a radio host for 13 years and to go through and sort through it and pick and choose, but I really did have to pick an intent as far as, well, how am I going to pick chapters for this book out of all the great hosts I've had? I mean, the guests that have come on have been fantastic. So I've had all these extraordinary conversations all these years. And how do you go through and pick it? Well, it's a very difficult thing to do. So when I decided, okay, there has to be a purpose to doing this. This isn't just to recapitulate the things that I've done or that sort of thing. This really needed to have a purpose. This book needed to have a purpose. So about a year ago, I came up with the idea. The idea came up with me. I don't know which comes first, but it just came to me that this had to happen. I had to go through my material and make a book of transcripts because, as you know, radio is much different than reading a book. And when you read a book, you can pause and go through the information and digest it much differently than if you're listening to live radio or even a recording because you're trying to keep up and you're trying to listen. Personalities and voices and all that stuff gets in the way and becomes sometimes a distraction to the actual importance of information. So putting it into book form, it did just that. It took very important, as far as I'm concerned, conversations about very important information that needed to be put down into print. And I hope I set, I hope I inspire other people to do it as well. I think with the genre of alternative media out there, which you've been a part of for many, many years, a lot of people have a lot of really good shows that have very good information. And imagine if we created a library of all of our transcripts and the conversations that have taken place over these very important years, especially as information becomes more and more censored, more and more less, more free speech-like and more controlled and all that. So that's kind of how it started. And it was about a year journey. And as I picked each one and went through the transcripts and we got them written, it was really clear that the ones that were chosen had a really important purpose in the layout of the book and how the layout and distribution of the information, even throughout the book from chapter 1 to 20, was put into place so that people could read it and get exposed to certain information in a certain way that would help them, hopefully, by the time they were done with the book, transcend some of the chaos that we face today.
And we've got so much chaos going on today. I do want to get into Donald Trump, but I want to put him back for a moment. You start out the book with a conversation that you have with David Icke when he was on your show. And David, in my opinion, is a very interesting and thoughtful person. He puts his opinions out there. He stands behind them, and he doesn't really care what anybody else thinks. He's there to share information. What was the one nugget that you received from David's interview?
Well, David and I did 4 shows over the course of a few years. And prior to me doing the first show with him, I had been challenged. I was working with Lynn Andrews at the time, and her and I had a private conversation, and she says to me, you know, you should go read all of David Icke's work. And at that time, I had no idea who he was. So I, of course, being a good student, I went off and bought one of his books. And I jumped into it, and I immediately was horrified. And if I had not been told to go read that material by the person who told me to do it, I don't think I would have done it.
Really?
Because it was so, well, yeah, because it was so extraordinarily difficult. The material that he presents really is challenging to your belief system, period. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And, I got through, I took about 2 years. I didn't read anything else except his work. And then I started to read his source books because I felt like, well, if this, what this man is saying is true, well, this is really important and this really needs to be confirmed in whatever way I can do it. So I went through his resources in the back of each book, and I ordered probably about 90% of the source books and read each of those over the course of 2 years. So this was before Mount Shasta with a friend of mine who was reading through his stuff at the same time to see him speak. He had come to the States, which is rare. And so we drove up to Mount Shasta to see him speak, and he only had about maybe 50 people, and the place didn't fill it, not at all compared to what he does now. Uh-huh. And you got to remember, we're talking about, we're talking almost over a decade ago, really. Uh-huh. And so his speech, his lecture, his passion, the energy behind his presentation was incredible. I mean, we sat there and watched him for 8 hours. He only took a 15-minute break, and his stamina was exactly the same at the end as it was in the beginning because he was so passionate. So when somebody's really passionate about what they talk about, you have to pay attention to what they're talking about usually. I do anyway. I've learned to listen, and you can tell when somebody's coming from a place of passion versus somebody that's coming from a place of trying to fake that. And David wasn't faking that. David was very sincere in where he was talking about. Now, this, mind you, I stopped following his work. I didn't really follow his work. I stopped reading his work after I started the radio show, because after going through all of his material, I said to myself, my God, if even 80% of this is true, okay, then we got real big problems, and somebody needs to be talking about these things, because he was putting together industries and topics that at the time nobody else was doing, and many of the things he predicted are coming true now. Uh-huh. The microchip agenda, he talked a lot about the nanotechnology, the biotechnology, the vaccines. These are all really important topics. Now, for some of those people who don't know anything about his work, this is going to sound bizarre, but the people who do know about his work, you'll understand this. And the reptilian agenda that he spoke so highly of in the beginning of his work, I didn't necessarily agree with. I could understand it in the terms of an energy, people having a reptilian kind of energy. But I myself have never seen anybody morph into a lizard. And so until I see that with my own eyes, I just kind of put that up on a shelf and I go, okay, I can understand. But I could understand it from an energetic standpoint. So I always process that part of his work as an energetic, symbolic type thing than I did more of a literal Hillary Clinton is a lizard under the skin. And like, that old 1980s show, the V came out and everybody was lizards under the skin. Yeah, David does. I feel like they studied his work then and then they just made a movie. And it has a lot of similarities to what David says. He doesn't talk about it so much anymore that I know of, because once we completed the 4 shows, David went off into some area with the moon and some other places, and I had become so busy with my show, I just didn't have the time to dedicate a thorough read into his work anymore, because I felt like I did it and I had the understanding, and then I had 4 conversations with him. So I felt like my work with him was pretty much done, and I know he still continues to do lots of incredible things today, but he does talk about a lot of the hard stuff. And if you want to talk about censorship and alternative media and people that bring these kinds of things to the table, you see a lot of headlines lately about Alex Jones. Uh-huh. So at the time when I was doing radio, he was the George Norrie of radio. He was kind of doing, everybody wanted to be on his show. A lot of people were following his work. He was gaining popularity. He had at the time the largest audience. Maybe George had the same too, but Alex is just becoming so much more well-known. And then when Donald Trump went on his show during his campaign, which I think we should talk about later, I think that was a pivotal moment in all of the alternative history genre industry. Because what that did was that opened up political scrutiny, which you're seeing now in the headlines, to alternative media. And they're going to take the quackiest, to the most outrageous, the one who says the most ballsy things on the air, and make an example out of everybody else who's doing the hard work and not using the showmanship to get the material out there. So anyway, that's how I started with David Icke. He became really pivotal in my understanding of some of the deeper things that were going on in the world, and he seemed right. I mean, I was fact-checking his work, going into his source books, and everything really was pointing towards this grand conspiracy type thing. And I guess it's still unfolding, but a lot of times I look at things and say, well, you know who said that first that I heard was David Icke.
Yeah.
David Icke said that. David Icke said that. David Icke said that 18 years ago. You know, it's like everybody has their short-term memory loss problems in this country, especially because we have been kind of trained to really just want the quick bite of something, the instant gratification. We don't want to work towards something or build up or let alone take time to read a book anymore. People want the YouTube video, they want the short little link soundbite, they, you know, and this doesn't have a million hits over that. It's not worth their time. Or it's not credible. Yes. A lot of things have changed since you and I've started radio, my dear.
Well, you know, a lot of things have changed, you know, in my 65 years of life. It's like, my goodness, as you said, people, they just don't take the time anymore, but then they wonder why they're struggling and they're like in their velvet rut and they can't get out. You know, the mind is in the velvet rut. I was speaking with a client actually the other day, and she goes, I'm a staunch Republican. I'm like, well, okay. And I said, does it matter to you who is running for office? She goes, nope, I just vote party line. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting, because she was looking to grow her thought process. And I was like, okay, well, if you're stuck in this arena, you know, not willing to look at other sources, other people, that might keep you stuck. And, you know, it's the same energy. You stay stuck. And she kind of saw it, but kind of didn't. But she was really, like, in this fear, because it has to be a certain way, and it has to be controlled a certain way. Now, you know, you said it earlier, Donald Trump, Alex Jones, he went on his show and things exploded for him. How did the alternative media really help Donald get into office, or did they?
Well, you know, during the campaign, I was hosting a political show, and I was doing a podcast once a week on a different political topic and interviewing different political people. And I was also writing a book proposal for the prestigious Cambridge University Nine Dots Prize contest. And everybody had to write a book proposal based on one question. And we all submitted it, and then the winner gets to be published to Cambridge. And the question was, how do modern day technologies make politics impossible? So I looked at this question. I said, oh, this is perfect, because I've already been watching the campaign for the presidential elections at the time, and I was hosting this political show. So it was really great thing for me to immerse myself in. And what I chose to do was I chose to take the perspective of alternative media and how his appearance on Alex Jones during the campaign actually helped his campaign to the point where he spoke to millions of untapped voter potential by talking the conspiracy talk that Alex Jones had talked up for years and years and years. And now Alex Jones was not the only person at the time talking about many of these topics, like Sandy Hook and all these other things that were going on. There were many alternative media hosts across the board that were talking about the same material. They just didn't have as big of a reach or an audience as Alex Jones had at the time. So I feel like Roger Stone, who booked Trump on Alex Jones, which is important to know, because Roger Stone, if you look into his history, is a very interesting person, and very, you kind of get that feeling of creepiness once you start to read through his profile, and you start to go, oh my God, okay, is this really what the back behind the scenes things really is? Well, yeah, sometimes it is, right? But anyway, Roger Stone gets Donald Trump onto the Alex Jones show during the campaign, and he's talking the talk, you know, he's talking the Illuminati, the New World Order, all these key phrases that have been put into alternative media over the years, because conspiracy kind of found a home in alternative media. It's nothing mm-hmm. new. It's not like it doesn't hit mainstream sometimes, right? It's just in how deep is it? Like 9/11, for example, I would consider a major conspiracy of our humankind history, if anything, uh-huh. right? Uh-huh. And if you really start to look into that, you do start to find alternative theories. Maybe this happened, maybe that happened. But no, it all goes against the official story. So I think what we're looking at is we're looking at an interesting way of kind of coming into an unintended industry of sorts where people really do have free speech and can get on a platform and talk about the things that they want to talk about and book guests if they want to or have conversations. The internet has become kind of a landfill of this stuff. Uh-huh. And some of it has changed opinions. Some of it has have opened up people's minds. Some of it has freed people from things. And so there's been a lot of good that alternative media has done. I would consider my show alternative media. I would consider your show alternative media. Uh-huh. Anything that's not on ABC, NBC, and CBS would be considered alternative media. If you take away the five top broadcasting companies in the top of the industry, anything other than that, I would consider alternative because they're not being run through the same editors, the same people who give yes or no's, the same ones who create a kind of collusion behind the scenes where it's only the story they want you to know that they're going to tell you. Most people don't realize how controlled the media really uh-huh. is. Uh-huh. And I think, if anything, Donald Trump has come out and asked us to ask that question. So as he did this on Alex's show over this period of time, I was watching the headlines really closely, reading articles, who was putting out what, and then I went to a rally here in Albany, New York, when he came here, and I went way up to the top, highest seat in the place, so I could get uh-huh. a really good overview and feel the energy. Uh-huh. And again, he was saying these kind of trigger words where he's, you know, anti-government, 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 and I think what he did was he ignited the anti-government flame even more and gave a kind of hope that he's going against the grain, that he's going to take on, you know, the Bilderbergers and the Rothschilds and all uh-huh. these key family names that we hear in the alternative media conspiracy realm. Uh-huh. And I think a lot of people related to that and actually believed that he might do it or that he would do it. There was hope. There was a little spark of hope. And people became very empowered by this little spark of hope. And off they went, and they thought that they were voting in something that I think was more of a chameleon energy. Like, I'm going to tell you what you want to hear, so you vote for me. And then when you vote for me, I'm going to get into power, and I'm going to do what I want anyway. Uh-huh. That's really what he did, right? Like him or not, it's what he did. Uh-huh. And most presidents, I think, coming up behind him, did sort of the same thing. They just didn't do it in such an outrageous way. They were more party aligned. They were more, well, I'm going to do it for the benefit of this company or that company. And Donald Trump is really just doing it for himself. You know, he's going in there and he's making sure he's setting himself up. So on the other end of his term, whether he gets reelected or not, he's going to have somehow better things according to his perspective of the world. So I don't know. I mean, I'm with you on all of this stuff, and I think that what happens when you have an outlet that's reaching millions of people and you become an influencer, and you're not corporate owned, and you don't have people running the show for you or dictating what's going to go on or what's not going to go on, you have a problem with people who are in charge of that sort of stuff because you become a threat to the balance of the official story. And once that balance of the official story is disturbed, then you have people questioning authority. And when you have people questioning authority, you know, things don't go as smoothly as the leaders of our country and stuff want that to be. So I found that was really interesting. It was a long way of answering your question, but I kind of felt it was necessary for people to understand why I was looking at this at that time, uh-huh. where my perspective was coming from at that time. And I have watched, since he got into office, a lot of the things that have happened. And he's just catering to the oil companies and the things that make money the old-fashioned way. It really uh-huh. just seems to be turning a blind eye to any of the technologies that can actually help improve our environment. And that's where I get very concerned. I'm not a very public hater of anybody anymore. I used to maybe put a couple things out there now and then. Okay.
You?
In my old and wizened age, I've learned my lesson. But I don't really want to jump on that bandwagon either. And I'm going to tell you, there's a chapter in my new book, Monique, that is really eye-opening. It's with Angela Kaufman, and she discusses the shadow of the American.
The
America's shadow. Mm-hmm. And she discusses, this was recorded right after, either right before or right after he was put into office. And we were talking about how the anger that was being stirred up, really big social engineering project, if you ask me, but there was huge anger stirred up. And all of this stuff was happening, and it's still happening because we're bombarded with anti-Trump stuff all the time. Somebody is spending a lot of money on ads. Someone is spending a lot on how to run all these things. And so when the election comes up, I'm sure Democrats will be put back in power, and then it will become this big world celebration thing because the big bad wolf is out. But what are we doing right now that we can't change with leadership? Yeah. Well, look at the Gulf. Look at Florida's beaches right now. What's happening down there that we can't take back with a change of presidency?
Yeah, well, he doesn't care.
You've got to think about these things.
Yeah,
no,
but he
I don't think
he
a lot of people don't care.
I was going to say, and people who live there don't necessarily even care, you know, and I don't know if it's fear or they're just, you know, stuck or they just don't want to take responsibility for themselves. But people, we have to wake up. It's time to wake up. And one of the ways to wake up is to get Hillary's book entitled The Hillary Ramos Show Transcripts, Conversations on Technology, Time Travel, ETs, 9/11, and Consciousness. Buy a copy for yourself. Buy a copy for a friend. Okay. And then, like, have a book club reading it and discuss it, because in her book, she's talking about real world activities that are going on today. Yes, it might have been put in place, you know, 15, 20 years ago or even longer, but it's coming to fruition now, and it's important to pay attention. Hillary, I remember during the election cycle, I was listening to Steve Bannon, because I listen to everybody, and I was listening to Steve Bannon, and I heard him saying this, stuck in my mind to this day. He says, if you want your country, you're going to have to fight for it. And I'm like, well, at first I was like, well, what does that mean? You know, and then as I thought about it and watched things unfold, he was telling the country what they're going to do. And to me, it was a certain aspect of fear. So how can we get past, raise above all this fear energy that is out there right now? People are afraid to travel. People are afraid to go to the grocery store. They're afraid to take a walk to the park. I mean, that's crazy.
But it's true. Okay, so now we have this situation where fear is kind of tipping the scales. Yeah? Maybe. I mean, I guess it depends on which outlet you're plugging into, because when I don't plug into anything, because I've gone a long way into my art life now. So when I'm working on a piece, or I'm in the studio, or I'm doing something for an installation or a project, I don't even feel any of that energy if I don't tap into it. But it's easy for me to tap into it. So let me say this first. Because I was in it for so long, and I was watching and observing and tracking and picking my guests over the weeks and the years that I was doing my show, according to where we were going as a culture, as a country, as a planet, it was really easy for me to do, so it's just not something I turn off. I mean, I can turn on the TV anytime and watch it and not get sucked in.
Right.
Because I think you have to get to a certain point where you realize nobody has the ability to pull you off center unless you allow them.
Exactly.
Okay, so if you're going to allow a headline to pull you off center, you need to go meditate right now. And you need to stay there until you stop it. Okay. You have to really remember that you're a beautiful being of light, and your beauty and your joy and your light and shadow, and you can do all these things. You can walk through all of these things and not get hurt or stuck or sad. I mean, you just have to realize how you're getting pulled in. You know, let's say you haven't quite worked on dealing with your emotional stuff yet, right? Mm-hmm. And every time you go into a certain topic, your emotions get triggered. Well, that topic is a great teacher for you, because it's enabling you to take a look at the things that are triggering you and heal them. I have a background in healing arts along with my business background. Thank God I did both. It was a great balancing act. So when I look at any topic, I always think, well, am I having an emotional reaction to this? No. Okay, mm-hmm. great. Then there's nothing there for me to really go into a healing work with for myself, right? But if I'm reading through something and I start crying and I have a huge emotional reaction to, or I get really, really angry at it, then I know, ding, 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 we have a winner. There's something mm-hmm. here that's triggering something inside of me mm-hmm. to look at, just me, or you can go work with somebody if that's what does it for you. And you have to figure out what that is, and you have to figure out what that is. It's a great opportunity to find those little golden nuggets inside your energy systems that can allow you to do more healing. Because mm-hmm. basically, at the end of the day, when it comes to the end of our lives, we all have to face what we have or have not faced.
Yes.
And I mean, I volunteered for hospice for 2 years, so I was working with families who were at the end of their life. Uh-huh. And there was a distinct difference between people who had made peace and had made, you know, there was acceptance and there was peace and there was no regret, no shame, and they had said what they needed to say to people. Uh-huh. I know we don't always get that chance, considering the circumstances, but the energy was much different than somebody who hadn't done that and was at the end of their life and had no control over that and was going to go whether they had done it or not. Uh-huh. So I've always said to people, why don't you just take whatever happens to you in your life and use it as healing material, fertilizer for the soul, right? Uh-huh. And just keep putting it on yourself until you feel like that's no longer an issue, because we do get past it. We do heal things. We do move on. We do change. We do grow. And everybody has that same opportunity. And it's just, and that wisdom just comes from life experience. You know, I'm not sitting here claiming to be Miss Guru on here trying to tell everybody how it is. But I can tell you that my life experience has definitely enabled me to see circumstances where I've learned that.
Yeah, and you're willing to pay attention and, you know, and grow. Folks, we're speaking with Hillary Ramo. She is the author of the Hillary Ramo Show Transcripts, Conversations on Technology, Time Travel, ETs, 9/11, and Consciousness. You can check her out at her website, and that's hillaryramo.com, HillaryRaimo.com. Please get the book. It's eye-opening. It will cause you to think. Okay, it will cause you to react. You might get mad even, but that's okay. Okay, you know, fill yourself with some knowledge so that you can get out there and truly experience life and pay attention. Now, Hillary, you interviewed Chad Marlowe, and he was with the ACLU Council for Data Privacy. And in that interview, you guys discuss what made me get rid of all my LED lights.
Sorry.
I mean, like right then and there, you don't know, girl, because I had outfitted the whole house, and I'm like, and we went and took everything away. But you discussed how LED lights are being used to implement an infrastructure of spy technology. Enlighten us.
Yeah, well, he gave us that information. I was shocked. I had no idea he was going to talk about that on the show, and I got him on there. We had a great uh-huh. discussion, because at the time of talking to him, I had already really gotten deep into some of the heavier technology stuff. I was working in cryptocurrency, and I was navigating my way through a bunch of different topics that had relevance. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. When Chad started to talk about this, and let me give people listening a little bit of background here. Now, Chad Marlowe is the head counsel for the ACLU for data privacy, and this man is the legit credibility, you know, working for all of us and are trying to make life better for us citizens and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, he revealed on the show, and this transcript is in the book, that LED light systems are made with the ability to be equipped with. Spy technology. Dink's mm-hmm. question in response to that was, well, I thought we were buying them because it was better for the environment and it was going to save us money and we were going to help the planet. And he just says, yeah, isn't that interesting? And I will never forget that, because basically that was an acknowledgement that the whole marketing aspect of global warming and doing things mm-hmm. for the betterment of the environment was being used and manipulated. Mm-hmm. So how can that even surprise anybody, really, when they look at the actual logistics of current day leadership? I mean, it's so heavy and soaked in deception and corruption. I mean, if you were really to uproot all of these systems, you'd have to take every single leader out and start over with some other kind of formula of what you really want in. Mm-hmm. So Chad was talking about how most LED lights, if not all, public LED lights are equipped already with spy technology, and that was part of its design. So if you're, you know, you think you're walking through a parking lot somewhere, you don't see any of those old-fashioned little cameras that you see sticking off the poles, that's okay. You're still being watched anyway through the lights. And this was coming straight from Chad Marlowe from the ACLU.
Well,
and
you know,
I'm laughing because it's not funny. It's almost funny that we are so gullible as citizens to fall for these things and not think that they are somehow trying to implement something that would just benefit them to some degree, right? So this isn't really about the planet or saving money. This is about spying on people and in putting into place an infrastructure, a digital infrastructure that is all about location and surveillance. And some people would say, well, I don't have anything to hide, so who cares? Well, that's great if you're late on a credit card payment or you haven't paid your taxes or you do something, you know, along the lines that requires someone to find you and collect their money. I mean, think about the implications of that, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really frightening because here in Fremont, about a year ago, they went through the whole city and all the city lights were transformed into LED lights. And I kept looking, I live on a corner, so I kept looking at, you know, the light pole and I'm like, what is that device up there? So I actually asked the guy when he was installing another, he goes, oh, it's a camera. I said, well, did you tell us? He goes, oh, no, we have ways of, you know, getting information. And I kind of let it go because I'm not cool about it. But, you know, that just verifies everything that you said. In this, you know, city, we've got like just under 300,000 people, and we're
They don't need your permission, and they don't need to tell you.
Exactly.
And here's the thing. China this past summer, spring even, actually implemented an interesting surveillance program that utilizes the technology that Chad Marlowe speaks about in my book and a few others. And they it's all about, you know, you watch somebody on the public camera, or actually it's a private public camera, and you see a little square floating above their head. It'll list their credit score. If they have any outstanding warrants. And a couple other little itemized things that, you know, you can tweak it or program it to be whatever you want. It's all, and then they've also launched recently a social credit rating system. I don't know if you've ever watched the show Black Mirror on Netflix, but there is an episode on there where a woman goes through her day and she has to rate her interactions with people, and she gives them anywhere from 0 to 5 stars. And if you have a good social credit rating and people have given you lots of 5 stars, you can buy a house, you can own real estate, you can have a good wedding, you can fly in a plane. Well, guess what? Guess what China just did? China just took that episode of Black Mirror and made it reality living in China. So now people can rate each other, they can rate their interactions with each other, and you start to accumulate a social credit score. So we all know where that goes, because if you're not socially abiding to the rules and regulations of your society, not only do you usually get outcast as a black sheep, maybe people don't want to hang out with you or work with you, but now you can't buy a house or get on that plane to go visit your grandparents or your friends or whatever. You know, where does it stop? I mean, that's my question, is where does all of this stop? When does it stop? When is too far too far? I think the Internet has already taken over. I think the Google search results are completely manipulated.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever's running the show behind the scenes is doing a great job to censor information, censor people, disassociate people from others. It's really just so much bigger than what most people think. And how do I know this? Because I've interviewed a person from a different quadrant of information for 13 years and sewn it all together, and it creates a really interesting picture, and that's my own life experience. It's really easy for me to look at some of these things and say, oh, well, that's going to go in that direction.
Yeah,
that's going to go here.
Yeah, and you don't have to be an intuitive to figure that out. It's just paying
attention. No, but I am, so it makes it that much easier.
And it makes it, much easier and clearer, whether that's a good thing or not, whether or not it's clear. And, folks, she's an excellent intuitive, by the way, and she does do consultations. Check out her website, HillaryRaimo.com. Hillary, you've investigated something that I know nothing about, and actually I was approached recently to purchase some items with a Bitcoin, and it was just overwhelming. Because they wanted me to make a decision right then and there, and I didn't have enough information. So talk to us about the Bitcoin, and what have you learned?
Well, as far as Bitcoin goes, I started watching the markets back in 2014. I had brought a man on my show. His name is Stuart Trusty. He's the CEO currently of WorldBit.com. And Stuart taught me how to read the markets. He taught me how to buy mining contracts. You know, my initial investment was 3 cents. Okay, uh-huh. So way back then, it was still not quite the enormous thing that it became in 2016-17. Uh-huh. So I watched that to see, well, what is all of this, and to get a little bit better of an understanding. And then I started to take courses at the University of Nicosia in Crete. Uh-huh. Which offers a master's program in cryptocurrency, and now there's other universities offering it. Princeton has something. Some of the other, I think there's like 5 or 6 other colleges in the United States that are offering cryptocurrency degrees. It's starting to take on because blockchain is the real gem as far as the big banks are concerned. Uh-huh. What blockchain does is really it can ledger anything. So anything that can be ledgered, like your Facebook post, you know how we post and post uh-huh. and post, and it just kind of goes down the page, and you don't really know where it goes until you have mm-hmm. to search for it. But that sort of thing can be ledgered. Okay. Accounting books can be ledgered. Anything mm-hmm. that can, you know, when you buy your groceries can be ledgered. Mm-hmm. Anything about life can be ledgered. So blockchain comes as the infrastructure, if you will, of cryptocurrencies, meaning that there's a way to keep track of transactions for the most part. Now, out of Bitcoin came a zillion other cryptocurrencies, a zillion other ICO offerings, lots of branches off. It's like the wild, wild west. Everybody is doing something or trying this new thing, or this one's making money and this one's not. So for a while, it just became, I think, really trendy because people were investing into Bitcoin, and the value of Bitcoin was going up so much that people were making money that normally weren't making money. So you had a bloom of financial success for certain people who were investing into this over a certain period of time. And what mm-hmm. happened was because that was becoming so big, and people were, you know, big banks were losing control of who was, who had the big bucks. Uh-huh. They had to shut it down. So it's my belief that big banks came in and said, well, how can we learn and benefit from this, which they studied it and they figured out how they could, and they are, and now we need to shut the rest of them down because the rest of them can't be our competition because we can't control that. Uh-huh. So they wiped them out, and they figured out a way to go into social media the same way they're accusing the Russians of doing for Trump, and they went in and they ran ad campaigns, really nasty headlines for Bitcoin, and people have just gotten so lazy they don't even click on a link anymore to uh-huh. read an actual article. They just read the headlines and make an assumption. Uh-huh. So I watched the social media news feeds and Twitter comments, everything started to fill up with anti-cryptocurrency. And then suddenly it stopped. Like, they just disappeared. And uh-huh. because Facebook had made a decision to not run those ads anymore. Because, and I've heard rumors of this, because Facebook is actually going to create its own cryptocurrency and use the Facebook infrastructure that they have uh-huh. to implement it, which is with billions of people. So if you can get billions of people who are already using your platform, you need to do that. But what do they need to do first? They need to connect your banking system and your information to your profile. Uh-huh. So they're in talks right now, and they have been recently, with big banking as to how they can benefit each other by exchanging data. Uh-huh. So I'd like to know who's the big at the top person who makes these decisions when my data goes, who's buying my data. Uh-huh. You know, we're not getting any of those answers. So Bitcoin kind of opened up the realm to really taking a look at how the financial system can be unchained from the big banks and eliminate the third-party processing payment services, which do make uh-huh. lots of money for people doing online transactions.
Right.
You really can't do any kind of online transaction without going through a third-party payment system.
Exactly.
But if I could just hit a button and send it to your wallet, and you could hit a button back and pay me back to my wallet, right, okay. without any online information, transaction, you know, fee uh-huh. charged, or that's a big threat to what's currently in place. If you look at the world banking system as it is, you would see why that would be such a big threat. You're talking uh-huh. about taking zillions of dollars away from corporate entities that are used to making zillions of dollars, and they don't want to stop. So putting the financial freedom back into people's hands where they have no third party, they don't have anybody that they really have to ask permission to go and send money to, doesn't get authorized. Sure, there's always that percent of people who use things for the wrong reasons, but if you think about the mass and the majority of people who could be using that for the right reasons and saving money and being more convenient and less invasive, I don't know. I was really for it when it first came out. There was a big rift in the alternative media genre that people were thinking that it was a global thing. The Illuminati was coming to take us over. I said, oh, well, all you have to do is go tell that to Trump, and then he'll speak it out in one of his speeches, right? Okay.
Yep.
So anyway, so I couldn't help it. So I just look at this like this was a very misunderstood event, but it was also the first one of its kind. So we have a mathematical formula that came out in 2008 and really freed the world or gave the world a different route uh-huh. to take in the financial system. And if you look at the consequences of our current financial system, they're deep. They're environmental. They affect humanity on lots of different levels, and they create a lot of cages for people that aren't necessarily for their best well-being.
Uh-huh.
If you replace it with a different financial system that changes all that, I don't know, I can see a lot of good for that. And the blockchain technology really does offer a phenomenal way of keeping track of transactions if you were to regulate it. And uh-huh. maybe it's not so much about being the vigilante running off doing secret bank transactions as it is about, well, how can I go buy my groceries today and just pay it with Bitcoin and walk away, and nobody knows.
You mean it not be tracked?
Well, let me tell you, it can and it can't.
Okay.
So if they put it into a regulated system, it can be tracked. It would be tracked by blockchain.
Uh-huh.
And blockchain is nothing more than a permanent ledger system. So
okay.
Monique gave, you know, the grocery store $105 on this date at this time. I mean, it's fair, and if somebody uh-huh. knows how to go find it, they can.
Okay.
But it's the truth, right? It's a truthful transaction.
Right.
So when you have leadership that's filled with corruption and contamination the way we do, it's going to be really hard to convince leadership to allow that kind of blockchain permanent transaction tracking to be applied to some of their campaign funds mm-hmm. or their personal bank accounts or things where, you know, somebody is doing something wrong. I can see why they wouldn't want it. So there's freedom in it. There's less tracking. If it can be untracked, it can be completely anonymous if the technology is set up that way.
Uh-huh.
So you can go to the grocery store, buy your items. Nobody knows it. But think about how much data use has become so it's just there. It's like data for everything. You go on
yeah.
your cell phone, you're playing a game, data. Upload an app, data. Upload, you know, your Price Chopper grocery store savings card, data.
Data. Yes.
Everything is data.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So so it's going somewhere. Somebody's collecting it. Somebody's reading it. Somebody's using it. Somebody's selling it. Somebody's figuring out how to make you a better consumer, market better products to you, which is why if you Google something on your phone, it shows up all over your computer on all the little side screens.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
It's real. It's mm-hmm. real. It's there. I mean, Facebook and other places like that, the tech giants may not want you to make that connection, but it's pretty obvious when you Google green scarf on your phone, right? And then all of a sudden your Facebook page and your Google page are all covered with possible green scarf opportunities.
Yes.
What they've done.
Mm-hmm. And people aren't paying attention. I think they see it, but it's a subconscious seeing or an unconscious seeing. And so they just like go with the flow.
I think they think it's convenience. Somebody knows me so well that I don't even, I can just put in one thing and then I'll have five options of where to buy it.
Yes. But
some people really might just see it as convenient.
Yeah,
convenient. Okay.
And they truly are, they truly don't know you. And
kids,
truly
I mean, you and I are in a different age group from the kids growing up now.
Uh-huh.
And when the kids growing up now are looking at their phones, like if they don't have that convenience, which is expected now, they lose interest and they don't use something, which can mean no money for whatever that something is, right? So they really learn to hook our young people into a digital aged expectation of convenience, which means smart homes will sell really well to that generation. Smart cars will sell really well. I mean, we're kind of becoming the old folks, and what do we know? Right?
Yeah,
what do we know?
Well, I have millennials still living at home, but they're at home and it's okay. You know, they're paying off bills and whatever and saving for a house. However, they've got smart whatever within their rooms, and it's amazing. It's truly amazing, you know, what I hear and what's going on. And they don't seem to have any concern about maybe you're being recorded or maybe, you know, something nefarious is happening with all of this information that you're throwing out there. It's just like, no, Mom, it's easy, you know. Let's smart lock the house and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, no, as long as it's my house, it's going to be my way. But let me ask you this before we go. And our time is coming to an end, but I really, goodness, there's so much more I want to talk to you about. Now, we've spoken about the Internet. Is it now truly completely controlled and monetized? I mean, everything because of what we were just talking about?
I really feel like it is. I'm 45 years old, okay? So I was still the generation before Internet even became a thing, okay? So I remember the days before the Internet even existed, really, right? We didn't have any of these fancy stuff.
Uh-huh.
When we first got all of it, it seemed to be able to really help elevate consciousness, perhaps, right? It could really get people information when you needed it. You could Google something, and it just seemed like there were more options. Now it's like the ones who have paid the most money to be at the top, and pretty much the rest of the search results are there, but you don't necessarily have some of the lesser well-known things. I think the alternative options on perspectives and opinions are slowly being taken down. I think you have industries where it's the same celebrity formula that it is with anything else, and those that are allowed to become the celebrities in a genre or an industry are there to be the experts, and then everybody who's not them really doesn't know what they're talking about. I think it's really done, it's definitely changed in the last, I'd say, 5 or 6 years especially.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also had the Edward Snowden years happen. We, you know, he came out and warned us that the tracking abilities of the government was at that point dangerous, so God knows where it is now.
Where it is now, yeah.
And anytime you have a live signal, according to Edward Snowden, and everybody, you know, villainized him at the end, but that was a very well executed campaign to discredit him.
Uh-huh.
But what he did was he warned us that, you know, if you're online anywhere, or you have a phone running next to you, or you have a camera on your TV, which used to be a conspiracy and now it's not, or you have a friend sitting next to you who has a phone, anybody who knows how to use the big infrastructure stuff on the military or the government side can access you. They can turn on cameras, they can turn on microphones, they can listen on yours. If you're known to hang out with somebody, they can track them. Okay. They go through your contacts, all in the name of national security. 9/11 changed everything. Okay, because anybody who's tracked the privacy laws since 9/11 will see the same exact thing. All you have to do is dig, and you'll find it.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, I just feel like we have this tool that up until now has been seeming to be pretty convenient. It's connected us to a lot of different ideas. It's broadened our reach of networks. We've been able to connect with people all over the world. Without the Internet, I wouldn't have had a show that was able to be accessed from all over the world. So a lot of things have been good about it, but now I really do see a drastic difference, especially since Trump came into office,
uh-huh.
of search results.
Yes.
When you Google something, the search results are not the same. They're not the same as they used to be. It used to come up with all kinds of different things. Now it's got to be, you know, one of these five magazines, and these are the only legitimate mm-hmm. outlets, because this big political thing of fake news and all this stuff's gone on, like a big name changing everybody's idea of information, which I think was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're just using it to monetize it now. How can we make them better buyers? Well, let's mm-hmm. cater to whatever they want. So they study your search results. They study what you are looking at. They study all of this different stuff. And all the presidents made this possible. This was not just Trump or just Obama or just
Bush.
It's
been in,
all of them
yeah,
played
it's been
a part.
For years, yes.
Yeah, and it's been leaning up to this tight cap. And Trump has just got the personality where he can implement it and not care. He can implement it and not care. And one thing you never see Republicans or Democrats or lefties, righties, or whatever the heck this stuff is,
mm-hmm.
They don't argue over data privacy.
No, they don't.
They don't argue about who should be spying on you through your phone or who's listening or who's watching. None of that stuff is ever on the table for discussion or debate because they all agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that Chad Marlow said to me on the show, too. He was like, you never hear them, you know, pointing fingers at each other about who's right or who's wrong, because they all agree that it's a necessary thing. And then when they have the best spy technology, whoever has the best spy technology, suddenly they become our best friends and allies.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they're stopping terrorism and they're doing great things. So you got to ask yourself, how are these government entities finding these people? How are they monitoring all of these things? Why do you need to get fingerprinted when you go to Disney World? Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah, Disney? Really?
You have to fingerprint my whole family going into Disney World? Mm-hmm. What? Now, if you tried to pull that at an airport, it would never fly.
Exactly. But, you know, for me, that's a non-starter, you know. But that's just me and, you know, my quirky way of looking at things. If things don't seem reasonable to me, I choose not to participate in
right.
most of it, you know. But it's its own thing, I should say. No, we've talked about a lot of things, but everything that we talked about, do you still think that it's possible to have unconditional love for the world,
yes.
for each other?
Yes, and I think that's the greatest thing of all. And I'm so glad we're ending with that, because I know a lot of the things that I talked about this hour are probably pretty alarming, maybe feel a little heavy for people. But here's the thing, it's just knowledge. Like, once you know, you can't turn it off and say, well, I don't know that, right? So then you pick and choose when you're on your phone. You pick and choose when your TV's on. You pick and choose when you're walking out in nature versus sitting home. I mean, these are your choices. You can walk away from all of it anytime you want. You can read a book instead of read an article online. Mm-hmm. Right? The book isn't staring at you with a camera. I mean, you're in your own private thoughts, right? You can go sit at the beach and feel the beauty of nature as long as you're not in Florida. And then you can do all these other things that have to do with expanding your mind, soothing your soul, being harmonious. You don't need to be a part of the digital world. You don't need to check your internet or your email every 5 minutes. You
exactly.
don't need to be doing a lot of that stuff. So I think it just comes with the awareness of choice, really.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at all this stuff and not let it ruin my day. I can think about it and talk about it and not let it ruin my day, because I know at the end of this conversation, I can hang up and I can go outside and work in my garden, or I can go do whatever makes me really loving and happy and spend time with my family and not feel like, you know, things are, the sky is falling. But I can be aware. Mm-hmm. I can be in the know. I can understand things that may perhaps be scary, but what is fear other than really being afraid of the unknown? And once you know, it's not unknown anymore, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's ways of walking through this that you just have to be able to keep it all balanced. You have to know who you are, and you know, if you're not quite sure, going through that journey will definitely help figure that out. And once you know it, then there's really nothing stopping you from living a beautiful life.
Mm-hmm.
No amount of government intervention can ever, you know, take your soul away or make you feel like you're anything less than a beautiful being of light, right?
Right. unless you just allow it, you know, and it's like you said earlier, it's what we allow. We need to pay attention and be forthright. Well, Hillary, I really enjoyed our time together. Folks, if you like what you heard on the show today, get the book, The Hillary Ramo Show Transcripts. If you don't like what you heard, get the book and really read the stories, The Hillary Ramo Show Transcripts, because it's going to allow your mind to expand and think, okay? And it's going to be really important, especially in these times, that we have some free thinking, you know, some knowledge, free thinking. You can agree or you can disagree, but at least you have investigated. You've come to your own conclusion instead of being told by the powers that be what you're supposed to think. So, Hillary, I thank you for your time. The audience, I thank you for your time. I'm truly honored that you guys spent time with me today. The divine in me honors the divine in you. And I want you to remember that the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of loving yourself. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.